Hey everyone, welcome back to Product Marketing Life, the show where we sit down with everyday product marketers, talk life, career, and most importantly, product marketing. I'm Colin Majak, lead PMM at Klassy and GoFundMe. And today I got a chance to sit down with the queen of B2B messaging, Emma Stratton. If you don't know Emma, Emma is the founder of Punchy, a B2B messaging and positioning consultancy that helps B2B tech companies write simpler, more human messaging. And in this episode, we talked about exactly that. We talked about Emma's experience as a creative writer and how she sort of stumbled her way into B2B marketing. We talked about how to make your messaging more human and the barbecue test, one of my favorite analogies from Emma, and how you can bring your whole team along with you along the way to move towards more human messaging. I really enjoyed this conversation and I think you will too. Enjoy the episode. Emma, the queen of messaging herself. It's so good to have you on. How are you?
Awesome to be here, Colin. It's really fun to talk with you today.
You are, if I remember correctly, you're based in one of my favorite cities in America.
That's right. Portland. Portland, Oregon.
Yep. I lived in Portland for 7 years and I'm still convinced you cannot find better food in a smaller area.
Yeah,
in
per terms capita of the, or whatever.
Yes, they're like, you walk into a corner coffee shop and it's not just a coffee shop, it's like an excellent coffee shop or it's an excellent food place.
It is. The food is great and it's just beautiful as well. It's just a beautiful place to be. So yeah, I'm very happy here. It's good to meet a fellow local, even though you're somewhere else.
I miss it often.
Your heart is still here.
I miss it this time of year. My heart is still there.
Yes, your heart is here.
I'm coming off of the sweltering humidity of the South right now, and it makes me miss the crisp Pacific Northwest summers.
I grew up in the East Coast and the humidity and just the hell that every summer would be. I grew up without air conditioning. And when I moved to the West Coast, I was like, this is a revelation. You know, no humidity. And people who have been here their whole life, they don't understand like what it's like on the East Coast and that humidity. Yeah.
Yeah, I grew up in California, then Portland, and had no idea.
Yeah,
and they have like more bugs. Lack of humidity.
Yeah, there's humidity, and then that brings more bugs. It's a double punch, and like it's still sweltering at like 10 p.m. at night. You're still dying.
Okay, so I asked Andy McCotter Bicknell this: do you have a favorite restaurant in Portland?
I mean, it's like really boring because I live in the suburb. So I tend to go to things that are out here. And we got a bamboo sushi out here a couple years ago.
Bamboo's like near so me. Good.
I just come back to bed. I've been to all the locations. It's just solid, you know? So I'd probably say that is my favorite because I've eaten there a million times and I just love it.
Bamboo is so good. We lived for years a few blocks from the location on 23rd.
Oh, that's dangerous.
Yeah, it was dangerous. We gave so too much money to Bamboo. Yeah. Well, again, I'm so happy to have you on. For people who don't know you, you're the founder of Punchy, a consulting and training firm that helps B2B tech companies win on their positioning and messaging. And you've got a book coming out soon, Make It Punchy. And I was going to ask you when it comes out, but you just told me you had a launch date snafu,
which I know. Let me make you all feel better about your launch snafus.
Because it was planned to go out the 18th, right?
Well, you know, it's funny. It went around and around. Originally, I wanted to do it on 9/9 because I like the double 9/9.
A great date, yeah.
Yeah, 9/9. And my publisher was like, they're like, we're not going to be in the office on the Monday. If anything goes wrong, don't do it then. Do it on a Wednesday. And I was like, well, Wednesday, September 11th. I don't want to launch on September 11th. You know, so I was like,
for obvious reasons.
Yeah. So I was like, all right, I'll push it to the next week, the 18th. And so we've been working towards that. And I went on pre-order in late July in Amazon. And because it's on-demand printing, there's some back-end business. But essentially, I woke up this morning and a whole bunch of people are like, oh, great news. The book I pre-ordered is now suddenly arriving on Monday. And then I go look and the Amazon button is now saying buy now and no longer saying pre-order. And I'm like, what is this? Like Amazon is just deciding, but it's actually now hitting on my original intended launch date of 9/9. Like this is now actually the launch date, 9/9. So I don't know.
All of our product marketers can imagine the horror of if you woke up one morning and the code you were planning on launching in 2 weeks was pushed to production. And it's like, hey, that thing, it's live.
Well, I got to tell you, this is the second snafu. The first snafu, when it originally went on pre-order, you kind of don't know when it's going to be available on pre-order again because of the Amazon backend engine. And so I didn't think it was on pre-order. So I had this wait list going. So I was like, the CTA was like, join the wait list.
Yeah.
And then I just read a LinkedIn comment in one of my posts. And they're like, oh, I just pre-ordered your book. I'm so excited. I'm like, what? You can pre-order my book? So I had to rapidly retro-change all of these call to actions I'd just been doing. It was ridiculous. I'm not a product marketer. I'm a messaging expert. I'm not a launch expert, clearly.
But you are fast figuring out the woes of a launch.
I now have real empathy for what you all go through.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as you've hinted, you are B2B messaging is your bread and butter. And I want to get to messaging in a second. But first, I have a question about your kind of story. So you studied English, right?
Yeah, English with a major in creative writing, just to make it even more of a useless degree.
Okay. And then I saw you. So creative writing into one of your early gigs at Penguin Random House. Then you spent some time doing freelance writing, which to me just sounds like at your core, you're a writer.
I'm a writer.
And you're even a creative writer at that. So, okay, I'm not off base there. How does a creative writer end up in B2B tech?
It's the hunt to be able to earn a living while writing. And, you know, when I started, I mean, I graduated probably a lot earlier than, you know, quite a few listeners. So I graduated in 2002. And back then, everyone told me English degree is going to be useless. Like, what are you going to do with that? They're like, oh, work in PR or advertising or something, or work in publishing. So I knew I've always wanted to be a writer. I've always written. And I was trying to figure out, like, how do you get a gig? How do you make a career out of that? Because it's not easy. There's no kind of like, oh, here you go. Do X, Y, Z and you'll make a livable salary. And so I was just trying all the things. Like, I loved reading books. So I tried publishing, realized it wasn't for me. Tried, you know, freelance writing, journalism, editing magazines. Fun, but ultimately not for me. And it wasn't until I kind of found myself randomly in a marketing role. It's in consumer, actually, is where I started. That was the first time I was like, this is really cool. This actually is a really fun job and really kind of meshes with my skills as a writer. So it was just me trying to blindly kind of looking around in the dark, trying to figure out a career.
Yeah. Well, I feel a lot of resonance with that experience and that I haven't equally useless set of degrees. I would say more useless. I studied theology.
I love that. I mean, philosophy, theology.
Yeah. Like, so my undergrad and master's are both in theology. And I worked in a church for a long time. But the thing that I took out of that is I learned how to write. Because if you're going to talk in front of people for 45 minutes, you need to write.
That's actually the hardest job ever, maybe.
Yeah. Well, you know, in some, yes and no, for sure. But that writing skill, I've become more and more convinced that good product marketers have to be, by necessity, need to be good copywriters. You don't need to be the best copywriter in your org. Maybe there's people who are better at copy than you, and that's fine. But you have to have some copy chops, in my opinion, to be a PMM.
You do. I mean, I always say good writers are good thinkers. You can't write well or communicate well if you're not thinking well about what you're trying to say. So good writers are often just really smart people because you have to be to communicate clearly through words. Yeah. And so I think this is what they don't tell you about English degrees or anything that requires writing, liberal arts, that if you can communicate well written, that's going to serve you incredibly well and make you one of the smarter people in the rooms in all kinds of careers and job roles. The transferable skills are huge, but no one really tells you that when you're 18 and clueless and just making these huge decisions and not really having any idea what being an adult is going to be like.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. I resonate with a lot of that. Now, think about your background. I can kind of connect the dots between your background more clearly and what I think is your main sort of point of view. Like if I had to peg your point of view, and this might not be fully accurate, it's just that B2B messaging should be more human. That seems to be your mission And I really love that. Is that, would you agree with that? Would
Nailed
you
it.
Nuance it differently?
Yeah, no, that's a very punchy kind of explanation of my view. That is my point of view as in the fewest okay. words possible.
Yeah. So I had, can I share an ouch moment that I recently
yes,
had?
Yes, I love it.
So I was recently reading one of your posts and where you talked about headlines and you said something to the effect of, hey, if you've only got three words, you don't want to go for something abstract like unleash your potential. And I kid you not, my company had just moved away from having the words unleash your potential in our hero, much to my chagrin, to be clear. I said from day one, I looked at my boss and said, I want to change this copy. I don't think this is good copy. But it was just a reminder that this sort of abstract word salad messaging is really pervasive in B2B. And so I would be curious, why, just if you could put on your diagnosis hat for a second, why do you think B2B is so drawn to abstract and aspirational messaging? Like, why are we the way we are?
Yeah, I feel like it started with one person started this 100 years ago, but it started. I think it started with, this is business. Business is different from life. Business is serious. Business costs a lot of money. You know, this kind of this division of business and life that probably was even greater years and years ago, right? That division is falling away. But I think it started decades ago. And it was like, these are really expensive, intelligent, smart stuff. So tech is very much, this is the smartest stuff. This is the top innovation. This is the best. So it's a combination of, we want to sound really smart and innovative, and we got to be serious. This is business. We're talking business. And then a fear of maybe, oh, I want to sound, you know, bigger and better than the competitors. Yeah. And I think it's those types of things got us into this place where these conventions are being used all the time, like unleash your potential. Yeah. And everyone's copying each other. And then everyone's everywhere. Yeah, and then everyone's doing it so much it feels normalized. So to go away from that now feels scary for a lot of companies. Yeah. And it's so funny because I understand the thought process that happens behind, let's just say, unleash your potential. I get it. It's like we help people improve and we want to make it sound exciting. Unleash it. But funny story, I was training a bunch of European product marketers this summer in London, and they were all, this was so great because there were a lot of Germans, you know, Swiss, there was Spanish, and they were all saying, and French, lots of French. And they were like, it is so hard for us to translate the messaging that we get from this large tech company that I was working with. They're like, we get this stuff and it's like, there's no translation. Like, unleash means take a leash off of your dog. You know, they're like, we don't know how to translate this stuff. And they brought up this really great point that other languages, they can't translate this weird jargon B2B stuff that we use. They're like, I don't even know what this means. There's no French translation.
There's not a phrase for that.
There's not a phrase for that. So they have it really hard, you know, when you think about it.
Yeah. Two interesting observations there. One, I really like your observation thinking about how some of this has its genesis in this big separation between the personal and the vocational, or personal and work. And we see them as very separate and we feel this need to communicate differently. That's really interesting from an origin standpoint. And I do think it makes sense of the shift where we're seeing more presence on social media like LinkedIn. We're seeing more of a personal connection to work. It's the lines have gotten blurrier, but messaging hasn't caught up. And then even just that use case, the second observation of that international use case, if you are an international company, you are highly incentivized to have simpler messaging because it can't translate.
Absolutely. I get that question a lot because so I talk about simple human messaging. So keep the word simple, keep it clear and be human. And a lot of people ask me, hey, we're a global org, you know, we have to localize. Does your approach work for that? Yeah. And I'm like, yes, this is actually the best. The simplest words are going to be the less abstract, the easier to translate, rather than all this highfalutin language that we use. And something I've noticed a lot is in my training courses, we often have European marketers or marketers in you know, who English is their second language. And they have an easier time writing simple messaging because they're just pulling for those straightforward words. And they're great. They don't have, they're not, they haven't been, I don't know, warped by
they're
living in America.
They're not trying to unleash anything or supercharge.
They're
anything.
Not. And and it is funny because the American perspective of tech in America is very different than tech in Europe, tech in Australia, you know, the tech scene in Scandinavia. Like there's this, of course, thinking, oh, America is this hub, Silicon Valley. And they know there's this brash Americanness to it all. And there's success. But then the dark side of all that is
it's so embarrassing.
Unleash your potential and all the other silly things we say on our websites.
Yeah. It feels like a lot of just taking ourselves too seriously.
Yeah.
That seems to be one of the undercurrents here, which is a very American thing to do.
Yes, it is very American. Yeah. It really is. My husband's English. So he says Americans are just very earnest.
That we are.
You know, just so earnest. And so a lot of English jokes sometimes flop.
Yeah, I think the idea of trying to move away from that seriousness is so helpful. It reminds me, one of the analogies that I feel like I associate with you is your barbecue analogy.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you mind sharing that analogy? I think it's so helpful.
Yeah, it's actually kind of an exercise that a really simple one that anyone can use. And it is, you know, when you write something that seems a bit jargony or a bit, you know, fluffy, like unleash your potential in real time or something like that. Just think, okay, how would I say this at a barbecue? Because a lot of times these sentences that are kind of silly, you would never be caught dead saying that out loud in conversation.
Imagine?
Oh, you'd be like, Colin, I really want to unleash the potential of, you know, my new laundry detergent on my dirty clothes. You know, it's just like no one says that. So in, you know, by saying, okay, how would you say this if you were at a barbecue talking with maybe your buyer, relaxed t-shirt, having a beer, just chatting on the weekend? How would you say it normally? How would you talk it? And that is a really quick way to come up with simpler messaging. And it's funny because I train a lot of product marketers. And so we'll do an exercise and they'll write something and they'll be like, oh, this still feels a bit jargony. I'm sorry. I have minimized inefficiencies in here. Like, And I just say, it's okay. Let's just barbecue it. How would you say like reduce inefficiencies or whatever at the barbecue? And then they say something and I say, that's great. That's so simple and lovely what you just said. Write that. And then they say, you know, for all this time, I've been thinking that kind of what comes naturally to me is not the right thing, that I got to dress it up or make it better or more exciting. Like it's not enough what I naturally think. And I always say, no, what you naturally think is really good. I mean, I teach a lot of marketers and I can't think of someone who I met who I was like, oh, they're not good at this. Like they're never going to learn how to do this. Yeah. Like every marketer, and I've trained over 1,000 at this point.
Okay, that's big time.
It's over 1,000. Like I got data here. They are all good. And I think if anything, they lack maybe the validation or confidence. And a lot of that comes from the culture you're working in, you know, what it's like at your company, how much experience you have, if you have any mentorship, those types of things. So I think a lot of times people just want to feel, they want someone to just let them know, you're doing this right. You're thinking about this correctly. Yeah. You're doing it right. Because it's easy to doubt it.
Yeah. I had a funny experience this morning. So I was writing go-to-market plan. I'm drafting early messaging for this product we're going to launch. And I was writing like our positioning. And I said, like part of the way I think they're positioning is like, what is it? Why? What does it compete against? Why is it different? Mm-hmm. Who is it for? Like that's my framework.
Yeah.
So I wrote like, what is it? And I realized the sentence that had come from my fingers into the keyboard had like was jargony. Like it was like something to increase fundraising performance and raise more, like super abstract. And I just had this moment. I was like, it reminded me that I have such a strong conviction around simple messaging and clarity. It was such a reminder that it can, if you're not careful, there's this gravitational pull towards that kind of abstract jargony messaging. Like it's so automatic. And then I had to go back and I ended up changing it to like something like, so you know what's working, what's not working, and what to do next. Like
exactly. Barbecue.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, And that's true. I say when you type, you just go into this autopilot and these crazy words just bypass your thinking brain, go straight out the fingertips onto the keyboard, and you've got this sentence. And so it does take breaking habits, and it takes a little bit more effort to get off of those reflexes and think, how can I really say this simpler? How can I make it more clear? Like, it takes more time. And I think that is a tough thing. A lot of folks don't have that time. So there's a lot of things having to be written in very short turnarounds, and people are under stress. And so those aren't great conditions for coming up with something fresh and new and simple.
Yeah, totally. Because even for me, realizing on the time I had, I knew that I could crank out that messaging and it would get approved and it would be fine.
You have no issues with that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, no one's going to push back on that. And I think a lot of PMMs will hear what we're talking about, hear what you just said about moving towards this more human messaging, and they'll experience what I feel, where it's like, yeah, I want that. Like, I want to start writing and creating messaging that works that way. But it takes a foundational change to how you're approaching it. So I would be curious, we talked about the barbecue kind of filter, where you can barbecue it. Do you have some other steps that folks can take to start moving down the spectrum towards more human messaging? Like, do you have a framework, or like, where should someone, do you have a framework that someone can also think through as they're trying to move that way?
Yeah. I mean, I have a bunch of frameworks in the book that are around kind of how to write like headlines and messages and how to think through your strategy. But in terms of how to move forward with more human messaging, I really think, like, day one, right? It's like we're totally jargony and we need to kind of change.
Yeah, tell me day one. That's perfect.
Yeah, I think day one is really, I think, well, first realizing that everyone in your space is saying the exact same thing, just to really understand. So do a messaging audit and just see exactly how bad it is, just to get you really fired up to be more human. But then really, for me, it's talking to a few customers and getting transcripts of the conversation and asking them to describe, you know, the challenges that you're solving, how it makes them feel, you know, have them describe in really concrete terms, you know, what their situation was before they got the product, what was it after, and asking, like, you know, well, how would you describe our product? All those questions, messaging research type questions. But ask a few people, record it, and then just make a transcript of it and just read it. And just think, get a highlighter and think, is there anything where they've just said it really nicely, really simply? And if anything, you'll realize they don't use any of the words that we have on our website. You know, and I think you can start to adopt some of the phrases that they say, because you want to talk like your customers talk. And so they have a knack of saying things simpler, getting to the heart of the matter. Yeah. They can just do that because they're not kind of burdened with all the knowledge that you have as the product marketer. So I would really do that. Look at the language. So I know people want to go to data points and, oh, all the gonkals say that, like, we should talk about this idea, but look at the language, look at how they actually phrase things, and you'll start to, I bet you'll get inspired even just by doing that. Like, oh, that would make a great headline, or we could put that, you know, in an email. So that would be my day one activity.
Yeah, that's such a good starting place, just to kind of comb through customer calls. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have any, take some and do that. Because I feel like I've had that experience where some of the best headlines I've had have been, I just stole the words from a customer. I just said what, I didn't even quote it. It was just, the sentiment was so there that, oh, this is how you think about it. Okay, great. That's what it is.
It's awesome. No, I can't. Yeah, the best headlines we've done are the same. The best stuff we've done is taken from the customer, and you can feel confident in it because it comes from the customer.
Now, my experience, and I think a lot of PMMs experience this, is that they may start with messaging that feels simpler, clearer, more human, but that messaging has to go through a lot of approvals and revisions before it goes out the door. So, like, it may go through demand, it may go through sales, it might go through a VP, legal, and there's so many eyes on it before it goes out that it's messaging by committee. And my observation is the result of all that is it's kind of that even if that messaging started punchy, By the time it gets its way through, it has lost its sparkle. It has become very flat and tame, or back to the default. I'm curious, from your point of view, is that preventable? Can you write messaging as a team? Because I know, like, some people would just say you need to go, like, write messaging on your own, and that's how you avoid that, is you have one person write it and that's what you run with. Can you write messaging as a team that is still punchy?
Yeah. So you can, but it's hard, and you have to do it in a very specific way. I've only found one way to do it, and that's as a consultant. And I'll get into that in a sec, but I will say what you describe is one of the hardest things about writing in a job. Like, it's really frustrating. And a lot of the issues that make it so hard around process, around who owns what, around politics, who gets final say, all that stuff is really what causes the problems. And then the words are just the manifestation of the organizational issues. So I've only worked at an in-house company once because I came from agencies, but it was a shock. So I was used to agency world where things move fast and lots of clients. And now I was head of copy, basically, and everyone was just tearing it to shreds and the red pen.
I do not envy that position.
Oh my God. It was like, oh, and I my heart goes out to people because I think sometimes it's cultural and there's nothing you can do save firing going to a different organization. Sometimes it just cannot be fixed because it's personalities. But sometimes you can. Now, you can't do this for every time you have to do messaging, but if it's for, you know, tier one product, something big, I think, and I talk about this in my book, like actually getting a cross-functional team together to be a part of the messaging process. And I kind of outline how to do it in the book. But what I do is I will do the heavy lifting, the research, the everything that goes into new messaging. And then I will kind of have an idea of a couple ways we could go based on research and data and the objectives. And then I will bring a cross-functional team into a couple meetings where we kind of jam. And then we align on a strategic direction. And that's where, here's where you get feedback on the strategic direction, not the words. So I say, you know, we're not words here. We're talking about, do we align that, yes, the value is this and benefits X, Y, Z. And then once you get everyone aligned, then it's like, okay, now we're moving to words. And then I really limit the type of who can give feedback because not everyone is an expert in words, but they think they are because they use them. Yeah. And so having that tight sign-off team on the actual words, once the whole cross-functional gang have signed off on the strategy, that's how I've made it work. But yeah, to just write it in isolation and then pass it down, people are just going to tear it to shreds.
Google Docs. Yeah.
People just feel like, oh, they want my feedback. I must then make comments. And
the comments, nothing will kill messaging like Google Doc comments. For real. Like it's hard out there.
We always would be like, please consolidate your feedback. No open-ended questions. Just tell us what you want. Don't just be like, do you think this word sounds odd? ? It's like, no, that's not helpful. You know? So that's a really, really hard one. And I had a marketer at a training session who came to me and said that she felt like the session was so refreshing because she felt like she writes with a straitjacket on. Because the legal team in her case was had a very big presence, very heavy-handed, everything. Yeah. But it was funny because even when she learned kind of the punchy, simple stuff, they're like, oh, actually, we're going to be more likely to get this messaging through legal. All of those huge superlatives. Yeah. It's like, do that. It's like, legal. It's like, we can't back up that we're going to unlock your enterprise potential.
We can't. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, you might sue us, but.
Can't quantify that.
Exactly. But to say like, oh, know who's doing what and where projects are at or whatever, that's fine. Legal will let that go through. So surprisingly, or not so surprisingly, that simple approach is better for legal sign off.
Yeah. No, that's so interesting. I had not thought about the benefits there because my brain was going to, would legal want to nuance it to death if you go too simple and clear? But I think you could avoid so much of the over-promising that legal is concerned about.
Yes. I think that's it. I think it's, Yeah, it's the overpromising that they don't want. It's those big absolutes. Yeah.
Yeah, the big stat that you want to lead with, the big phrase about how we had a debate between the word smartest and smarter. That was a big issue with my company because it's like, well, we can't say we're the smartest because we can't prove that.
I know.
We shouldn't have been talking about smarts anyway. It's like,
about ourselves.
Yeah. So no, that's super helpful. And then I can really see the role that you played being mapped onto the role of a PMM, where I can really see a PMM being, these are the folks who know market research. Mm-hmm. These are the folks who understand the product and they can bring that in. And you bring in the right people. You bring in one person from sales. You bring in one person in from legal. You bring one person in from demand and someone who can block and tackle and tell people to back off. Like, absolutely. That's kind of, in my mind, who you need. Maybe one person from product. And if you can do that and move them through strategy and then kind of get all of them where they're like, I feel pretty good about the messaging. You've built five advocates from your cross-functional team and it's less likely your messaging is going to go through this meat grinder.
That's exactly it. I mean, we did it once, kind of the most amazing time we ever did this. We consulted with pretty well-known sales tech company, and they brought 17 people into this cross-functional team. And it was like the war of the big personalities. It was like everyone had a big personality. And going into it, I was like, uh-oh, this might be like a big fail for us. Cause normally it goes great, but I'm like, oh, I don't know how this is gonna go. But we got there. And the CMO was like, oh my God, I haven't even officially like operationalized the new messaging, but I'm hearing it in customer success. Like, I'm hearing it in sales. Like, they're already, as you said, because the heads were already in it, they were bought in. So they were already talking that talk. And people just want to be included. People just want to be included and heard. And so if you can do it in like a defined, clear way, don't just give them words, because really it's strategy that people are trying to say they have an issue with. Like, we want input on strategy. Word choice is not people's specialty. We have a few people who are experts in words, but it's the strategy. So if you can kind of separate strategy from the wordsmithing and pull in people, you know, as and when based on that, I think it makes it easier. If you just give them the words, people are just gonna just have it'll be a bloodbath. Yeah. No matter what you write, everyone will have something to say.
That's 100% right. That's super helpful. And even that feeling that what you're describing of, oh, I heard the new messaging crop up here or crop up there. Like, that's the big dopamine hit that every product marketer is looking for. I had earlier today, I sat in on a demo call and for a product that I had taken to market, and I watched the sales rep work through my track, and it was euphoric.
You do like a little dance, like, you know, what do? How do you celebrate?
Yeah, well, I was trying to be pulled together because I was there for some more technical questions that came up, and I was just there trying to be professional in front of the prospect, but thinking in my head, you're killing it, AE. You're doing awesome.
That is so good. I love it.
Something I liked is a line in your new book is that you want to help people sell their tech without getting technical. And I want to share what I imagine has to be a piece of pushback that you probably get that view. And so I guess one way to ask this is, what if your barbecue guest is an engineer or a data scientist? I'm the question being, how do you make copy that is punchy but still speaks to that more technical audience if that's who you're serving?
Yeah. So one of the concepts I talk about in the book is messaging altitude. And this idea of there's high altitude messaging, low altitude messaging, and kind of a continuum in between. And the high altitude is sort of like value, and the low altitude is feature level. And so what I found is a lot of companies are either stuck in one or two. They're either all about big value, like, you know, grow your business, or they're in the weeds. And so usually you want to hit somewhere in the middle for your audience, somewhere between kind of super high level, broad, high level versus narrow and specific and technical. But when you're talking to technical folks, they do require a slightly lower altitude in messaging, which means you want to be more specific. Not like the big, broad, overarching statements. You want to be more specific and closer to kind of the the feature or the product that you're talking about. So more in the show me what I'm actually going to be able to do with this thing, yeah, right? Is like the lower altitude rather than the higher altitude for the C-suite, which is, you know, what is my business going to be able to achieve with this? You know, what organizational benefits, et cetera. So when you're talking to technical folks, lower altitude, and also you can, they have barbecues too. So here's the thing. When you have a big like sentence, there are certain technical terms that you will want to keep because you're talking to a technical audience. It's how they talk, you know, like, you know, REST API or something, right? Like, I'm not saying get rid of all those words. There are certain key, you know, technical terms that you absolutely need, but there's all these other words in a sentence around those technical terms that can be softened and made simpler and conversational, you know? And so like, rather than like accelerate the diagnosis of issues in your IT landscape, it's just like fix issues in your landscape, right?
You know what I mean? You're too good at that. That was too good for off the cuff.
No, but so it's like, I spend too much time thinking about this, but so all the other words around the technical words can be barbecued, right? So, and that's how you make the message more simple, because two engineers at a barbecue still aren't going to be talking about like driving productivity and all those big words. They'll be using regular words too. So, you know,
but they'll talk about data. Like they will talk about the stuff that is.
Exactly. So like, for example, I worked with a cybersecurity solution, a company a while back, and I interviewed all their customers, and they, you know, I was representing like the hot new SaaS version. And a lot of these people had the legacy, hard to maintain, awful, old product. Yeah. And they all described it as like, oh, you know, this old solution, like, oh, it requires so much handholding. Like, it's just, everyone said like, oh, it needs so much handholding. I just found that really funny. I would have thought handholding, but that's a very casual way of saying a hard to maintain solution. Right. And they're just like, so we put that in the messaging where it's like, you know, a system that doesn't require handholding from you. Right. Cause that's what everyone was saying. So technical people do speak casually. And if you speak to them and get the transcript, you will see that they're not droids who are, right, just using all those words. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm hearing kind of two themes that you're sort of using to filter it. Is one is the same thing you said earlier, is just listen to like, what do they actually say? Mm-hmm. That seems to be like one of the North Stars. And the second is it almost, the words that you were beating up on earlier were not words that were about the product.
Right.
They were words around the product and promises around the product. And it seems like those are almost kind of two North Stars. Like, what do they say? If they're a technical persona, what do they actually say? And then what are the key words that are too relevant to the product to be removed? They have to be a part of the product. You can't talk about this product without talking about APIs. So APIs are staying, and everyone knows what that means.
It's okay, because people think simple means dumbed down. And when I say be simple, they're like, wait, I have a technical audience though. It's like, you can be simple. So my definition of simple is just like, as you said, simplicity is twofold. It's one, really landing on the core thing that matters to them, not saying all the things, but really that strategy, like this is what they care. This is the position, like this is it. And then using simple words to say it. So one idea, simple words to say the idea. That's it. And most people are trying to cram in 15 ideas and then they use big words.
One idea, a few words. That's super helpful.
So hard for people though. I mean, I know it's hard.
It is.
It's hard. We want everything. We want it more.
Yeah, that seems to be the thread. Is this a lot of times if you can't get that punchy, it probably indicates this deeper issue.
Yeah.
Of you don't know your positioning. You don't know like what that's the thing is that makes this product stand out, which is why you're kind of throwing five things at the wall and hoping one of them will stick with your customer or prospect.
Totally. And even that unleash your potential issue, I think I found sometimes people will write that because they don't really know what to say. Like they don't have enough information to go on about the product. And I know this happens with like brand teams, copywriters, they're handed a messaging doc they can't use. And so they just, transform your whatever, just put something like that. So you're right. I think a lot of this does stem from a lack of like a clear strategy.
Yeah, that's a really helpful observation. Well, Emma, this was so great. I feel like I could do this for a really long time.
Yeah, this is fun.
I'm naturally thinking about people who are going to want to follow up and consume all the content you have. So you're super active on LinkedIn.
I am.
You have a great newsletter that folks can follow at punchy.co. And what about your book that launched too early? Where can people get that?
Apparently you can get it right now on Amazon, but potentially not in all Amazons around the world. So that's the other fun thing. I've learned all these fun things about Amazon, but
yeah,
it's available now or soon. There's an audiobook version that is available as well. But yeah, Colin, you wanted me to do a hard sell, and it's really simple.
I want you to hard sell it.
Well, I mean, the hard sell is there is no book on how to do messaging for tech companies. Like, there just isn't one. And I think while messaging is similar to copy and storytelling, and there's lots of books on those subjects, there isn't really one for the product marketer to use to figure out, okay, I'm starting from scratch. Let me write some messaging that's simple and human. And so the book really gives a full process. It's the one that I've been using for years on all kinds of companies from, you know, it kind of touches a lightly on positioning because I think there's still always an element of positioning. And then, but it just talks in the research and how to figure it out, the strategy and frameworks to use and how to write and then how to implement it. And it's basically everything I know about messaging in a book. Like, I haven't really, I haven't held anything back for a second book. So it's all there.
This is your manifesto.
This is my manifesto.
I'm very excited about it. I was telling you earlier, I messaged my boss this morning. I bought it. And then I convinced my boss to say we can buy it for our entire product marketing team. So five or six of us, we're all going to read it. And then we're going to talk about it. We have a on-site next month. So I'm very excited. I'm hoping it just influences my whole PMM team because I want to change, and I think we want to change. So
I hope you find it helpful. I think you will. And I did write it because I want there to be like a change, because it's a lot. What I found is just it's a lot of marketers, people within orgs who want this and who say, how do I convince leadership? How do I convince my boss?
Yeah.
And I want to just get something out there to just start changing minds a little bit on that scale, so that all these good marketers aren't just fighting against this day in and day out, and instead using that energy towards, you know, creating great launches and writing great messaging and doing all the things that product marketers get to do.
Yeah. Well, thank you again for coming on the show and for making a lot of our lives easier. I hope that your launch crushes it. I hope you sell a bunch of books. I want that for you.
Thank you. Me too.
All right. Thanks again, Emma.
Thank you, Colin.
For everyone still tuned in, thanks so much for listening. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please help us spread the word to other product marketers. Thanks again, and have a great morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are.